Time to podcast.
Welcome, everyone, to the first episode of Hyper Time to Podcast. I am your host, Josh Miller, and I'm joined by the podfather himself, Alan Muir. How are you, Alan?
This podcast has been brought to you by Jules.
Can you explain that for anyone out there?
No, the kids know what Jules are. Like the cigarettes?
Yeah.
Nothing like a comic book podcast sponsored by Death.
Used to be a Camel, but now I guess it's Jules. Okay, so for our first podcast today, I figured we would go back to basically the beginning of the superheroes, and start with Action Comics number one, way back in 1938.
Jerry Siegel, Joe Shuster.
Mm-hmm. And the beginning of what many people consider the first superhero in Superman. So I figure there's no better place to start than there. And so that is what our episode will be today. Alan, how familiar are you with Action Comics number one?
I've seen the two big Superman documentaries, Superman up in the look in the sky, and the DC Universe Secret Origin movie.
Oh.
And the DC Universe Secret Origin movie sort of does like a little read through of what happens in issue one of Action Comics. And ironically, it's narrated by Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, really? That's awesome.
Yeah, it was the year before Green Lantern. I always remembered that Superman was trying to overturn a electrocution.
Mm-hmm.
But reading the issue, that it is a lot for only 14 pages.
Yeah, there's a lot that goes on there, and it feels very, what's a good word to put it? It feels kind of cobbled together, and there is a reason for that, and we'll get into it. But yeah, it just kind of hops around in that story, and that execution scene is just kind of the very first few pages.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the, I mean, at least with, like, you have a lot of expectations with the first issue. And, I mean, like, Batman, who I'm sure we're going to talk about eventually on this show,
mm-hmm.
Detective Comics, there had been a good amount of issues before he was introduced. And Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, they were working for DC, like, creating other characters. But this was the one that basically, as you might say, kicked off the superhero age. And at the same time, changed everything.
Yeah, and even though Superman is my favorite superhero, for whatever reason, Action Comics number one has been like the issue that I've never, for whatever reason, bothered to look into, which seems insane to me that I wouldn't have done that. So much of my thoughts on what this issue was that it was basically just a Superman story. I knew nothing else about what was being told in it, in this anthology book. So when I actually started doing this episode and reviewing everything, I was kind of surprised to see kind of what else was in there, especially with one character in particular who I did not realize went that far back.
Oh, are you talking about his female, Quinns?
His daughter.
What
are we talking about, the magician here?
Oh no, I read the issue, I read the 14 pages that they have on DC Universe Comics app.
Yeah, we'll get into that, because I was not able to read any of the other pages either, and it seems that is a very hard thing to do nowadays, since it very rarely gets collected. But so I had to find out what, like, I had to summarize everything else from other places on the internet to what these stories were. And there is one character in particular that I don't think the hardcore fans probably know who he is, but the not so hardcore ones probably of his daughter.
Oh, is it Zatara?
That's Zatara. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned this, because I've been Stargirl. They have a character, and he's basically just named the magician, mm-hmm. but he looks very much like how I pictured Zatara looking.
The first time I remember Zatara was in Underworld Unleashed, and it's been a while since I've read that story. I think there was a supernatural club that he was part of, and Zatanna was involved with that. I think it was.
And Constantine got him killed.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was surprised to see Zatara come up, but yeah, we'll get into all that a little bit later. So first what I want to do is kind of go over what the company was like at the time, because it was much different than the DC we know now. So at the time, it was a company called National Allied Publications, and it would eventually become DC, like, I think it was, like, 20 years later. Actually, no, it was much later. I think they were calling themselves DC after 20 years, but they didn't officially rebrand themselves until 1977. There was a lot in that I was coming up with, and so I actually thought maybe that would be a better idea for a future podcast, so I won't go into all here. But it does involve the company being in debt, bankruptcies, mergers, I want to say there was lawsuits, stuff like that. It was
definitely with, I think it was, it's one of the, I think it's the Siegel Estate.
Mm-hmm.
Over Superboy.
Yeah. Yeah. The Siegel Estate, it just, that was something that never seemed to end. I'm sure, I know it came up, what was it, a few years back too. I'm sure it's not the end we'll hear of it either, but.
I mean, Neil Adams and a bunch of other, like, he was championing getting those, like, Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster and their families royalties from DC.
Mm-hmm.
Because if anyone deserves it, they do.
Absolutely. See, at the time, oh, sorry, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, like, some Jack Liebowitz, Max or Harold Gaines, I can't remember which is the father or son, and there's another person who I can't focus on right now, who basically started the whole thing. Like DC, like when they were sort of making not safe for work material, and they sort of said that they went and got out of spicy pulps and went into the comic books, and like what, and this is all stuff I've learned from rewatching the documentary for the past 10 years.
Gosh, I need to watch those documentaries. I have not seen those. They're on YouTube. I will. I'll check those out. So yeah, National Allied Publications. They had 3 books. That they were mainly using to tell all their comic stories. The first one was called New Fun, which was later titled More Fun, in 1935, that served as an anthology book. It left its impression by being new stories as opposed to reprints of comic strips. And a lot of times there were advertisements that would fund the book. And this was a comic book that did not do that. And surprisingly, I found out many characters came from this series as well. Some of the names that popped up was Dr. Occult, Superboy, The Spectre, and many more.
Man, can't wait till we do the JSA show.
I know. I'm trying to like get the key issues to touch on our episode numbers if I can. Yeah. And so say Detective Comics 27. That is what I have down as I want for our 27th episode. You want to take a guess what episode I want 52 to be on?
52?
It'll probably be 52 and 53, but yeah, 52.
Yeah, because I'm sure we can cover 26 issues in 2 episodes.
We will try. Try my hardest to cram those in.
No, we could do. We could have Graydon on. Explain the whole thing to him like as if we're doing a lecture.
Let me tell you about Ralph Dibny and his straw wife in a cult. Anyways, back to Action Comics. So the second title that National Allied Publications had was called New Comics. This was also released in 1935, and it would become something different that more people probably recognize in Adventure Comics. It started out as a comedy book, but it was changed into something different later. And this is something I did not realize at the time, is that Jerry and Joe, creators of Superman, actually were involved in that prior to Superman coming about, and they wrote a character by the name of Jor-El, who was a detective in the future that would eventually be kind of re-envisioned as Superman's father on Krypton. This came out a year prior to Superman, and then later characters that would come up in New Comics or Adventure Comics would be some of the JSA standouts in Sandman, Starman, and Hourman.
So, no, I don't mean to just hijack the podcast again.
Oh, go right ahead.
So, Malcolm Miller Nicholson, Harry Donenfeld, and Jack Lee Woods. Those were the three, big three.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Died. Michael Wheeler Nicholson died in 1965 in Long Island. So
crazy. So, Alan, did you realize that Jor-El was created a year before Superman was created?
No, they don't. That's the one thing. It's one of those things they don't say. Like,
I mean, it's weird because even in Action Comics 1, they don't even reference Superman's parents on Krypton at all. So it was just really weird finding out that Jor-El existed before Superman did as a character.
Yeah, like, have you seen Krypton?
I have not.
Okay, so they have Clark's or Kal-El's grandfather, even though they kind of created that, or they, if that character is not around by the time Starman was around in like the Starman series in the mid to late or the early 90s, they had there was an arc where they went to Krypton and Jack Knight, who's the titular character Starman, tells Jor-El to send Kal-El to Earth, and the first thing, like when he gets back and encounters Superman, he tells him about this, and Superman asks, "Why did you tell him about like what was wrong with the planet?" And it's just one of those things where he's like, "If I told him about that, it would have changed everything. I mean, like, we need you here."
Yeah, that's a good point.
I just love when they do different takes on the DC legacy.
Yeah. Well, speaking of legacy, this third book that they had also has quite a legacy because it's Detective Comics. It came out in 1937, but the character that it's most associated with in Batman didn't come out until issue 27 in 1939. It was an anthology book about detectives. Jerry and Joe were also there as well prior to Superman. Slam Bradley, does that name ring a bell?
Yeah, he was on the first season of Batwoman.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, and the whole episode of was everyone shipping them, shipping Batwoman and Slam Bradley. And at the end of the episode, Kate Kane just he's about to save her and she just rejects it.
But also, it was one of those things that I had to go back and read for an upcoming episode. One of the ones that you had requested, I didn't realize he was also in that book too.
Yeah, there's a lot of, right now, or in the past 10, 15 years, the comics have been, since Dan DiDio, or during Dan DiDio's time, there was sort of a shared universe type concept or shared world where certain things in one book would be mentioned in another.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where it makes sense. And this was when there was 30 to 40 books. So going all the way back to the 30s when there was 3 books makes it much easier.
Absolutely.
So proceed.
All right. So now that we got those 3 anthology books out of the way, let's go to Action Comics and that anthology book. So to start up with Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster, they originally had the idea of Superman in 1933, and they were failing to sell him to different newspapers to get them in as a comic strip. It was originally a villain story. It could be found in the Reign of the Superman short story, and it's a mad scientist that picks basically a nobody off of the breadline and gives him telepathic powers, who then kind of goes a little power hungry and tries to take over the world, only to have those powers disappear and he becomes a nobody again. Unfortunately for them, it read as too sci-fi, which at the time many books were, and so nobody really wanted to put out yet another sci-fi book, and so they had to try and reinvent who the character was, and they would eventually come into Superman, the one we know today, even though it would seem that the original character seems very reminiscent of Lex Luthor in a way.
Yeah.
In my opinion. But Lex Luthor wouldn't appear until Action Comics 23 in 1940. And now there has been a number of inspirations into Superman, both in design and I guess why he was created in the first place. So the first is kind of more of a depressing reason in a way.
Is this about the death of someone?
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to go into that?
Yeah. So Jerry Siegel's father he died during a robbery. He wasn't robbing anyone. He was on the other side, and he had a heart attack, and you can tell it sort of shaped some percentage of the Superman character, a parental figure who could live forever.
Yeah, when I was reading it, it said that Joanne Siegel, which was Jerry's wife, said that after that robbery took place, that Jerry had many cases of drawing sketches of a superhero saving a man that looked very much like his father.
Yeah,
during a robbery. Do you know about the design of Superman? About where a lot of that came from?
No.
Okay. So part of the inspiration of Superman came from a lot of mythical figures like Hercules, in terms of,
and Samson. Really
strong. There was John Carter of Mars, who I'm not particularly familiar with, but it's a soldier who goes to Mars, and because of the weaker gravity there, is stronger. Some of the mannerisms that Superman does was given credit to action star Douglas Fairbanks at the time. The costume design, you know, I've heard Circus Strongman was the inspiration there. And then the very popular spit curl is said to be from quarterback Benny Friedman. And then do you know where the idea of Lois came from?
No, that's one thing I kind of wish I actually had had known, because when I think it was either junior or senior year of high school. No, it was my senior. I did a report on Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And me being a wannabe, me being the writer I am, I basically went to cover, I used the two documentaries and other outlets as sources.
Mm-hmm.
And finding out who Lois Lane was created, based on, can never find out.
According to one of the sources I looked at, it is based on Joanne Siegel, Jerry's wife. So at least sketching wise, he modeled Lois after his wife, which makes sense.
Hearing more of this makes sense in terms of if Jerry sees himself as Superman,
mm-hmm.
he sees Lois as his wife. He's lost his father at a young age. That's some of the major beats of the Superman character.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many similarities, and you see just how much of his own life he kind of put into the character. And then it shouldn't be all that surprising when he, you know, expects more royalties and something from a character that went off, I think, to far greater success than anyone ever expected.
Yeah, he became bigger than both Siegel and Schuster.
Mm-hmm. So now that Jerry and Joe had their comic strip ready, they did decide to sell to National Allied Publications. But the way they had to do it is that they basically had to piece their various strips together to tell one story, since it couldn't be like newspapers would do, where it would just be one strip. So they had different stories about their Superman character, and they just kind of threw them all together in a somewhat coherent story. But yeah, there were concerns of a lawsuit of it. Apparently the character was too similar to a Philip Wiley novel in 1930, but because the book could easily be canceled if it had to be, or specifically that Superman strip, National Allied Publications gave it a chance and went ahead and published it. And so on May 3rd, 1938, the first issue of Action Comics was released, and it's still the second longest running comic book in history, only trailing Detective Comics that started earlier in the year.
Have you ever seen Legends of Tomorrow?
I have not, no.
There's the second season had Eobard Thawne, aka the Reverse Flash, as the villain, or as one of the main villains. And that Legends of Tomorrow was a time-centric show.
Mm-hmm.
And during the second season, they had an episode where George Lucas is, all of his films were erased, and that he never made them. And it had major effects on Ray Palmer and Citizen Steel. And I'm just thinking, man, I'm surprised someone hasn't done a time travel story about the ramifications of erasing Superman would be. There would be no, I don't think DC Comics would still be around.
Yeah, I know they've kind of tiptoed. Well, no, I guess maybe not.
I remember in the documentary, they mentioned that because of Superman's success, they put out a call basically bring us the next Superman, which was one of the ways that Batman kind of basically became a thing.
Yeah, I don't know what the book is about. I know Brad Meltzer, people probably recognize him from Identity Crisis, and he did a run on JLA, that he did a book about Jerry Siegel and, you know, his father dying and all that. And I never read the book, so I don't know what it's about. But he actually wrote a book called The Book of Lies that has something to do with the origin of Superman. So I don't know what all it goes into. I don't know if it does something like that, but...
Some more fun facts. One about Brad Meltzer, college roommate of Judd Winnick.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Huh. And have you ever heard, you've heard of Irredeemable, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever read the final issue?
No, I think I only have the first four trades of that.
Okay, because the way it ends is Mark Waid giving the ultimate tribute to Jerry Siegel and Joe Schuster. So, I'm not going to say what happens. Just when you get an opportunity to read the last issue, check it out.
Okay, I will do that. And so that will basically get us up to the actual issue of Act itself. Before we get into it, I want to ask you, Alan, any of the differences between the Superman that was first shown and what we think of him now?
Yeah, he was not able to, he couldn't fly.
Right.
He was it was sort of like he could jump long distances. In my head, that's pretty much where all this stuff ends.
Okay, so yeah, I put down a few changes that are different than what most people seem to know. So in the first book, there was no mention of Krypton. It was just a distant planet that died of old age. I think it was only in one panel, if I remember right. They were not found by the Kents.
And given by a cyclist or something? And given to an orphanage?
Yep. And then his powers didn't come from the sun, but instead the genetics of the people on that distant planet were just so far advanced from normal human beings. So he was able to perform those incredible feats of strength. He could run faster than a train. Nothing less than a bursting shell could damage his skin. He couldn't fly, but he could hurdle a 20-story building or leap an eighth of a mile.
Powers far beyond those of a mortal man.
Mm-hmm. And he was showing strength as a child, but it wasn't until he matured that he was able to have all those advanced powers. So, Alan, would you like to go into some of that Superman story, or would you like me to go through it?
So it starts off with Superman having, like, he has someone with him, or there's a woman who's going to be put basically executed via the electric chair, and he's in a mad race to the governor's house, and the butler is refusing to let him see the governor, and he says, and this I found very laughable or just funny, just the reveal that the governor's like, he has like a gigantic, like a giant steel door,
right? I was cracking up at that.
So he just like he takes it and just and just tears it off, and then like the butler pulls a gun on him and it doesn't work, and he tells the governor that so-and-so didn't do the crime, the person outside did, or the person who's bound outside did, and it was cutting real close. And that's, and then I should we go, because the way I see the issue was two seven page stories, because we see everything with Superman, and then we get the stuff with Clark and Lois, and then Superman comes back.
Yeah, so basically, you know, Clark reads in the paper the next day that Evelyn was freed, and Superman was not mentioned anywhere in it. However, his editor at the time wanted Superman to be looked into, which Clark was fine with doing. And as he's walking out, he hears about like a domestic abuse that's going on. And so he shows up to that address as Superman and just kind of shows him up really quick. He throws him against the wall, only for the man to like come back at him with a knife. And obviously that doesn't work against Superman, which causes the man to faint.
Yeah, there's a similar type of thing that happened in the first season of Smallville.
Yeah.
A man, like someone tries to stab Clark in the chest, and the metal or the knife just splinters. And it's just like one of those, it's a slow-mo shot where Tom Welling and Eric Christian Olsen are just like, Tom Welling is just standing there, and Eric Christian Olsen is like doing like, looks at his hand, where the knife was. And it's just one of the funny things of Smallville.
Yeah. So after the man faints, he hears a police siren, so he quickly changes to Clark Kent and is like, yes, Superman saved the day. Fantastic.
And it's mentioned that it's not like how it gets to be later on, where he can just in a snap just switch from Superman to Clark. You see him like getting like his shirt over the costume.
Yeah, it's not a quick little vibration and suddenly he's Clark Kent or anything. It's just like having to go through the steps of actually putting on all of his clothes. But this is where like all those different comic strips being put together kind of is very noticeable, because it goes straight from him in the apartment when the police bust in to then being at the Daily Star asking Lois out on a date. It's just this very like
cobbled together.
Yeah, it's just kind of thrown in there all of a sudden. And then they're on a date and some dude named Butch comes over trying to get Lois to dance with him and be his girl.
Yeah, try to cut in.
Uh-huh.
Basically the scene from Back to the Future.
Yep.
Played to full effect.
It's done so well. And Clark does what Clark does, and that he backs down so he looks like a wimp, which just pisses Lois off. So she slaps the man and then runs off on Clark for not standing up. But then Butch follows her because he plans on getting with her in one way or another. But then that's where Superman comes in and starts chasing down the car.
Yeah, and they think it's the devil.
Yeah. And so he just shows up in front of it and then leaps over it and then starts chasing him again, picks it up, and this is where that iconic cover of Action Comics number one comes in.
Yeah, of him lifting the holding the car with one hand,
smashing it into a rock, and then he takes Butch and throws him up on like a power line. And takes Lois home. It's just, it's great. I love it. Then the next bit is him getting an assignment to go. He has to report on a war in South America, but he instead goes to Washington, D.C., where a lobbyist is trying to convince a senator to push through a bill that embroils the U.S. with Europe for exchange of money. Unfortunately, Superman hears this. And then keeps tabs on them all day. And Superman does something that Superman normally doesn't do and intimidates this lobbyist by carrying him around and running across an electrical wire, teasing that he may get electrocuted.
Yeah, this is before, like, you know, before we get the what Superman stands for, but his creed, like how we later get with Batman.
Mm-hmm.
How he his rule of he never kills.
Yep.
Which with Superman was also the case. I'm using that past tense because of Man of Steel.
Yeah. Yeah. I think some people still have in mind that the Superman that we typically know today is how it's always been, and that is not the case whatsoever. Same works with Batman. Same works with probably a good chunk of the heroes that we all know.
Things change after over 80 years.
Mm-hmm. And the part with Superman ends with him asking this lobbyist if he should leap from one building to another, and he does, but then misses the building. If I remember, he doesn't jump far enough, and the issue ends. It's like, okay. Yeah, that is the first story of Superman.
Yeah, I never thought that, like, when I got to that part in the story, like, I'm just, like, feeling, this is not my Superman. It's not Kal-El.
It's so different what we all know him to. And I can't say I'm sad that I haven't read this story up until now, but it's kind of cool to see the differences between what he was and what he is now.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, in the 30s, in the late 30s, times were different. And, like, what we see now as barbaric and crazy and just not right, those people of that time looked at it through a different lens and just crazy.
So we will go from Superman and discuss the other stories from Action Comics 1 that most people don't know, including myself. So again, I just want to reiterate that with these stories, I have not been able to actually read them. We'll get into later about how poorly the entire Action Comics issue has been collected. So a lot of this has been summarized from different sources I was able to locate. So one story involves Chuck Dawson in the tale of the 4G Gang Part 1. And it is a revenge story about a man named Chuck Dawson whose father was killed by some men in a range war. The same men took what should have been left to him in the Circle D Ranch in Texas, but Chuck makes his presence known in Red Gulch during his search by getting in a fight with a man named Notch Logan, which is a great name.
It's very of the time.
I love so many of these names. It's fantastic. He gets in a fight with him and is told to leave town by the sheriff, but two men are told to kill Chuck by John Burwell, the owner of AG Ranch, and meet him at a cafe. These two men try to make it look like a typical fight, with one of them named Trigger Holt bumping into him to make it look like an accident, and then prepares to shoot Chuck. Chuck instead shoots the pistol out of Trigger's hand and uses jiu-jitsu to stop him because, you know, everyone just is a black belt.
I just knew that.
You're right. However, the second man named Butch fires his gun and grazes Chuck's head, which results in him blacking out and wakes up in a jail cell later. Chuck, being the very brilliant man he is, can trick the deputy into coming by him before stealing the gun and forces the deputy to release Chuck. And then Chuck will tie up the deputy. And as Chuck finds his pistol, he hears footsteps approaching, which ends the comic strip for that one. The next story is the one we were talking about earlier, Zatara, the Mystery of the Freight Train Robberies. So Zatara the Magician seeks someone named the Tigress, thinking she is responsible for crimes taking place. Zatara and his assistant Tong board a train along with two detectives. One of the detectives is shot, but saved by Tong. And as Atara investigates, he finds the second detective being thrown out of the boxcar, already dead. And Tigress surprises him and shoves him off the train too, but his magic saves him and causes him to float to the ground. Tong is able to then have the train stopped, which Zatara catches up to, along with other policemen who blame Zatara for being the accomplice of the crimes. But Zatara thinks that the train inspector who does the accusing, named Babcock, has something to do with it all. So Zatara and Tong find a shack where there are some suspicious people that entered. Tigress ambushes Zatara, knocks them out, and she has her henchmen set the shack on fire before going to rob a train. Zatara is able to escape, and Tong has taken Babcock to the police and then boards the train. Zatara prevents the valuables from being stolen, but Tigress confronts him, and Zatara transforms her pistol into a bullet, and Tigress escapes. Zatara lays out the plans and how Babcock was involved, who also confesses to the crime. Just your typical detective story right there.
Yeah, and Tigress, she herself would be like changed from like from that point in time to currently. She is best known for being the Artemis Croc, and this is something that's been obviously different as Young Justice exists, and Fred Gardner, who created Tigress in this issue. This was way before the Justice Society, and she would go on to join the Injustice Society. And I'm looking at some of these old panels. This is crazy. that should be the subtitle for this episode. Alan says this is crazy a lot.
I mean, I'm just absolutely amazed at how many people were introduced way back in this first issue that are still around to this day. Like, yeah. Tigress isn't exactly the, you know, upper tier villain.
Yeah, she's no household name, but she is a niche, deep cut character.
So it's stuff like that I love and seeing still stick around.
Yeah, and something I forgot to mention when I was going through when I was recapping part of the Superman part of the issue, is that he grabs the butler, holds him up like he's a package, and just walks up the stairs and doesn't seem to mind if he hits anything. My God, the 30s were great.
So the next story, how's this for a name, Alan? Sticky Mitt Stimson.
Okay, this is this is definitely NSFW.
So this story, I found a few pages of this one online. There's not a lot of dialogue that seems to be going in it, but the gist is that a thief is trying to steal an apple from an outside market, but is caught in the act. And as he's trying to escape, police are after him, and it's just him basically running away from the police the entire story. He immediately loses the apples by bumping into someone. He tries hiding and fails. He jumps into a building and disguises himself. I think it's a cemetery. And then the last page that I was able to find is the police mistaking someone who looks similar to the one he's dressed up as. And then he comes out of hiding from a trash can. Okay, it's like, what is the story? I don't get it.
I'm looking at all the different stories in this in Action Comics number one. Uh-huh. Oh, man. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4 more to go.
Yep. The next one involves Marco Polo. The Adventures of Marco Polo, Part 1.
By Marco Polo. Or Sven Elvin.
Marco Polo, his father and his uncle travel to China, but is sidetracked to Acre to visit the Pope. The Pope instructs them to go to Tartary with priests and gifts, but the ship they're traveling on is a ship that is at war with Babylon, who discovers them out on the open sea. Marco and his family escape through an Armenian port and continue until they reach Kargar Pass. The party splits up after fears of savage tribes and some bribery to keep along. Marco leads one group and his father and uncle lead the other. As Marco travels through the hills, he is attacked by some of the tribe people. And in defense, Marco and his crew rolls rocks onto these people. Sounds thrilling.
The next story. Can I just say this next story?
Sure, go ahead.
Pep Morgan, the Light Heavyweight Championship. And I'll say someone we should mention, like someone who the editor for Action Comics, Vince Sullivan, is the man who bought or who was convinced of putting Superman in this book.
Oh, was he?
Yeah, and he also was responsible for, like, when Bob Kane and Bill Finger created Batman, Bob Kane brought it in to Vince Sullivan, and history was made.
I hope Sullivan got a hefty retirement for what he did for that company.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure he outlived, like, he passed away in 1999, so.
Oh, man, healthy life right there.
Yeah, so let's talk about this boxing match.
Yeah, do you want to take it, or would you like me to still take it?
I'll take it.
Okay.
Pep Morgan is fighting a boxing match against Sailor Sorensen. Sailor's manager, Doc Lowry, or Lowry, is a known cheat, and when it appears Sailor was losing, Doc covers his gloves in liniment. In the next round, Sailor swipes Pep in the eyes, blinding him, but Pep gets lucky on a blind swing and knocks Sailor out. After the fight, the police question Lowry, but the doc removed the liniment already, so without any evidence, they allow him to walk free. Months later, Pep and his manager, Pop Burkett, hear about Doc Lowry's new rising champion, Boomerang. Pep is suspicious of Doc using illegal methods to win those fights, so he and Pop buy tickets to watch Boomerang's next match. It starts out as a straightforward fight, suddenly turns odd when Boomerang's opponent begins acting groggy, as if he were drugged. One knockout later and Boomerang is the winner, though Pep smells a rat. And the next fight will be against Pep himself, so Morgan and Pop return to the gym to get ready. And Doc threatens Pep, saying he's been waiting for a chance to get back at him since he accused him of cheating. The bell rings, and Pep, Morgan, and Boomerang face each other in the ring. But after Boomerang lands a blow, Pep begins to feel woozy. But despite this, he wills himself to fight on. And Boomerang gets hit with a knockout punch and goes down. And before Doc Lowry can make an escape, Pop intercepts him, with two detectives blocking his way. He noticed that Doc had sewn a hypodermic needle to the gloves, which Boomerang would then use to dope his opponents. Lowry is taken away to prison. I heard everything about this stuff was, like, stuff like this could happen in the 30s. That's pretty inventive. Like, having it put in the boxing glove.
I love it. I just love how crazy some of these stories are.
And the names.
The names! I love the names so much.
The next one. Who's the hero of the next story? Please just say the name.
The next one is, Alan. Like, these are the names I want to use next time I do, like, a character creator in a video game.
You should do this when on the next set of consoles when they eventually port DC Universe online. Just have a massive amount of characters. So do you want to take the story?
I could take this one, yeah. So in Scoop Scanlon, the international jewel thief, reporter Scoop Scanlon and his photographer Rusty are notified that the international jewel thief named Arnold has been captured at the docks. So, of course, they go to the docks, and Rusty and Scoop notice some men carrying guns around the cargo crates. Arnold gives them the go-ahead as he's being taken away by the police, but the men get ready to open fire. But Scoop surprises them by attacking one of them from behind. All but one are taken down, and that one is able to escape with Arnold. And Rusty hitches a ride on the back of the car, too. The pursuit is on with Arnold's henchmen trying to stop the police and Scoop. They ultimately stop the vehicle. The police arrest Arnold and his getaway driver while Scoop helps Rusty. Rusty takes some pictures while Scoop calls in the story. And Rusty suggests that he gets credit after poking holes in the gas tank on the back of the car. Oh, man, these stories.
So, Scoop Scanlon would make it about 12 months till issue 13 of Action Comics, and then he just went away.
Oh, it's time to bring him back. Bring back the Scoop.
The next character, though, is actually, like, a really big character.
Would you like to take this one?
Yeah. Tex Thompson, Murder in England. Tex Thompson visits England and takes a stroll through the lush green country. He meets a young boy, Robert, who is fascinated by the cowboy life and invites him along as a traveling companion. The two of them stumble upon a murdered man in the road. Robert goes to find the police while Tex stays behind. Sonia, a nearby woman, encounters the scene and accuses Tex of the murder, forcing the cowboy to run from the sheriff. Secretly, he trails the girl, learning that Sonia is working with the killer and his gang. They've captured young Robert, the only witness to Tex's innocence. Tex frees the boy and sends him for help. In the meantime, Tex finds himself captured. Robert returns in time to free Tex, but both men are still in danger from the gang until the sheriff arrives to round them up. So Tex Thompson, he would actually last longer.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a former member of the All-Star Squadron. He formed Hero Hotline, and he operated in Brooklyn, New York.
But what is the name people might recognize him as?
Mr. America.
Mr. America.
Which, I don't know how WWE, like, made that name work. Did he fall into the public domain?
I don't know.
Or, actually, by the time they did that, it may have been when he changed, the name was changed to America Mando.
America Mando. God, if people need a reason why people enjoy comic books, the names by themselves are enough.
And there's also there's a character on Stargirl who is one of the big villains, Dragon King, and like he had a Tex Thompson had an encounter with Dr. Ito. Yeah, this when I first saw the name Mr. America, I immediately thought of Golden Age.
Yep.
Yeah, this I don't know if I would have bought this if I was back in those days.
Yeah, I don't know.
And I just dropped a picture of Dr. Ito, which looks very offensive by today's standards.
Yeah, that's another problem, like looking back at those comics today, is that
they're so racist.
Yeah. Very, very racist.
He looks like he's an alien.
Oh, it's so bad. It's so bad. Yeah, comics back then, you know, they're xenophobic. One of the, I think it's, is it the first detective issue that has like that really racist Chinese character on the front?
Oh, with the Fu Manchu?
Yes.
No, I think that's the first issue of Detective Comics.
Yeah. Oh, man. Just things they could get away with back then. Can't believe they did it. Oh, man. So Action Comics number one. So that is basically all the stories in there. There are a few other smaller ones that were like one or two page-ish, one or two pages long. I couldn't really find any details on those, such as Stardust and South Sea Strategy. So yeah, if you're wondering why we're not covering those, that'd be why. I just couldn't find anything on those. But yeah, that is... those are the stories that were told in that 64-page issue of Action Comics. I really am shocked how many characters have been carried over from that issue. Not only Superman and Lois, but Tigress and Zatara, Mr. America.
Yeah, I mean, when I first, last episode, when I mentioned, when I started reading, I started, heavily getting into DC when, in the late, basically near the end of the prime DC universe, prior to Flashpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I read on my phone about it was right before Flashpoint that DC was gonna, at the time, this is before they did PR stuff to fix it, it was just gonna be a straight up reboot. And great timing by me. After I just bought a whole bunch of comics off my comicshop.com.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that I remember a lot of people getting really upset with Flashpoint.
I hope we can do an episode on Flashpoint.
I fully intend to at some point.
Because, some of the different takes, the way things changed in that timeline, in, the tie-in books,
mm-hmm.
Chef's kiss.
I think they did a really good job exploring that world in what little time they had.
Yeah, there's, did you ever read the tie-in about called The Outsider?
Yep, that's probably my favorite tie-in of all those books.
And they never used them. They still haven't used them. And every time
that was James Robinson too, wasn't it?
It was James Robinson and Javi Fernandez.
Yeah.
And they had the Frankenstein book. They had the Dead Man book, where Dead Man eventually became, or Boston Brand didn't become Dead Man. It was Dick Grayson who became Dead Man. Mm-hmm. And there was Secret Seven, I think.
Yep.
Which was a bunch of the magical characters.
That's such a good. I really enjoyed Flashpoint. I have every intention of covering that in this podcast. So before we wrap up with Action Comics 1, I did have some random trivia here that I figured we could go a little bit. So one thing I found was that Clark Kent was developed as a reporter because that was the dream job that Siegel had when he was growing up. And so yet another case of him modeling a character after himself. According to the Comics Buyer's Guide in 2021, there are less than 100 original copies of Action Comics 1 still in existence.
Nick Cage owns one.
Nick Cage owns one, yeah. Well, actually, no, he sold his.
He sold it?
Yeah, we'll get to that in a little bit.
Okay, but when it comes to characters, or writers modeling characters after themselves, when we get to Detective Comics and Batman, that is 100% what Bob Kane did.
Yep.
His real name was Bob Kahn. Changed it to Bob Kane as soon as he could. Also got a nose job as soon as he could. And modeled himself after as a socialite. And there in the documentary Secret Origin, Erwin Hansen made a great point. What would make us want to draw ourselves? Like these poor little guys. What would inspire us? And Dwayne McDuffie said also in the documentary that comics, or I think it was Dwayne McDuffie, that the characters that endure and people love are made by people who don't fit in but desperately want to.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, it's why Clark Kent is, or Superman is a farmer, why Batman is a millionaire. It's definitely why I don't think I'll ever stop reading comics. I mean, depending on if AT&T sells DC comics, then I may just...
Yeah, here's hoping that things don't go south for the industry. I know COVID's not really helping right now.
Yeah.
So earlier in the episode, I mentioned about the collection of it. The full issue of Action Comics 1 has very rarely been reprinted, whereas the Superman story has been printed over and over again. When I bought the issue to do this episode, it was only the Superman story.
Yeah, 14 pages, right?
14 pages. It's been collected in books like Superman the Golden Age, Volume 1, Superman Chronicles, Volume 1, Superman in the 40s, and I don't even know how many more. But yeah, the whole issue, I think, has very rarely been reprinted, and part of that has to come from, I would assume part of it is from people trying to sell it as an original copy, because I do remember reading a story where someone was trying to sell it on eBay as like a very good condition of the original book instead of a reprint. And so part of me wonders if that's why, since they try to like reprint the old ads and, you know, same back cover and all that stuff, like they try to be very on point with their reprint. And I'm just wondering if they kind of got in the hot water with.
Yeah, it's why approach. Like, it's why like wrestling games or any sports games don't get remade, because like you have to, you or it's why. Yeah, it's why certain things have to be one-offs. Like, you can't do the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm not sure if it was Lost Horror Games or when we moved over to VGU, back to VGU, and news of the SmackDown Here Comes the Pain remake was, that rumor was making the rounds. It's just one of the things where as soon as I heard it, I just made it a note in my head, like, no, that's not happening. Because, like, certain people are... More than one person is dead that was in that game.
Yep.
Certain people are not with the company anymore. Or actually everyone, or most people are not with the company anymore. It would just be it'd be a financial nightmare. And well, when it comes to like reprinting the original Action Comics 1, the only person or group I can picture doing it is DC themselves. And in 18 years, if they're still around, I can see that happening.
Yep.
Like, It reminds me of what's happening with The Walking Dead, where they're basically just reselling the books, but the only addition they're doing is adding color, and it feels like a cash grab. But with the Golden Age anthology books, it'd be a chance to look at history, and that's something that we don't get to do much anymore.
No, really don't.
So, got any more trivia?
A few more things. So I think everyone is familiar with the cover of Superman lifting a car above his head.
Yeah, if you see here in the chat, I put it in the New 52 Action Comics cover,
mm-hmm.
where it's an updated version of that with Superman drawn by Rags Morales, and it's like an updated version of that where he's wearing the crest as a shirt, but it still has the cape, sort of.
Yeah, that cover has been reinterpreted or parodied probably more than any other cover I can imagine. Some of the examples I put were the Chris Burnham Captain Carrot variant from Multiversity Number 1.
Yeah.
Superman issue 124. It's been shown as like in story panels, such as Man of Steel 80 or Infinite Crisis 5. So it's just, it's one of those covers that it will never disappear. People will continue to use it in some form or fashion.
It's the comic book equivalent of World 1-1.
Yep, it's iconic. There are probably very few comic covers that I can imagine would be put on the same pedestal as that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some.
I'm thinking of like Detective Comics 27, maybe Crisis on Infinite Earths. Is it 8 with Dead Supergirl?
Yeah,
you know, Amazing Fantasy with 15 with Spider-Man. Oh no, there's not very many.
The iconic cover of Captain America where he punches Hitler.
Any cover where you punch Hitler is iconic in my eyes.
Yeah, punch Nazis when you can.
Exactly. There will be many of that going on in comics in the 40s.
And now.
And so, Alan, how much do you remember how much the book was when it was originally sold in 1938?
I want to say it was a dime.
Yep, 10 cents. So from inflation, if I did the calculator correctly, it would put it at like $1.89 by today's terms.
Oh, no. If that book was released today, DC would mark it up for like $4.99, $5.
Yep. 64 pages. Oh, you know they would.
Yeah. And I'm honestly, the only reason I remember it's that it was a dime. Jack Larson, who played Jimmy Olsen on the George Reeves on that, The Adventures of Superman. He mentions in Superman, Look Up in the Sky, just one of the things that will always be with me, like burned in my brain. It's just him saying, my dad will always gave me a dime to buy the comic.
Man, I wish comics were still 10 cents. I miss the day when they were like $1.25. That's how much they were when I started. I remember that price slowly ticking up, and I was like, I wish DC would continue to hold the line at $2.99, but...
they did sort of, but then things got bad.
Yeah. They tried. I appreciate it at the very least.
And sort of in the Smallville series finale, if you look closely at that, the Smallville, like the book that Gary Frank clearly drew, it says it has the little thing like DC holding the line at $2.99.
Oh, does it?
Yeah. iFanboy, when they did the special edition on it, they joked that Marvel would probably be, their comics would be $8.
Well, that's a lot of money, but Action Comics number one sells for very much more today if the condition is good enough. So I kind of have a little breakdown of some of the copies that were sold in recent years. So one of the more recent cases I found happened in 2018. Copy of Action Comics number one that was graded an 8.5 by the Certified Guarantee Company. Want to take a guess how much it sold for?
Many millions of dollars.
Sold for $2,052,000. Other copies included an 8.0 graded Action Comics number one, selling for $1 million in 2010. And that was the first time a comic book hit the $1 million mark. Nicolas Cage sold his copy in 2012. That was graded as a 9.0, which was the highest it was sold for $2 million. Oh, sorry.
Was it the highest grade?
Yeah, sold for $2,160,000. Highest grade as far as I can... Well, it was tied for the highest grade as a 9.0, but it was also the highest price paid for a comic at the time, back in 12.
I love Superman. I love all the old Golden Age stuff. The World War II, sort of creating a market for mint in condition, like in condition comics, just makes me angry.
Yep.
But do you remember the show Comic Book Men?
Yeah, the Kevin Smith one.
Yeah. So many episodes where people would try to like claim, said that they read an Overstreet Guide that this like a certain issue is worth thousands of dollars, even though you can clearly see that is not in that condition. But then again, that this whole thing could just be stemming from that, just my hatred of GameStop. But I digress.
All right. So the highest price for Action Comics one I was able to find was in 2014. That was purchased by Comic Connect and Metropolis Collectibles for $3.2 million. And then it was sold to a private collector who I don't know if it was ever revealed who that was. But in looking up all that, I found one story I wasn't expecting to find about a Action Comics issue. So this took place in 2013, and there was one copy that was graded as a 1.5 and was sold for a little more than $100,000. The story I read, it was at over $100,000 prior to the bidding ending, but I didn't see the final price on it. But a 1.5 will give you over $100,000 in that. It was found in a fixer-upper house that a couple of people bought for $10,100. They were in the process of removing a wall and found that the copy was being used as insulation in the wall.
Oh man, who does that?
And the value would have been higher if not for a tear that they found on the back cover. And had it not been for that tear, it would have been considered at least a 3.0 and would have earned at least another $100,000 in value. It's insane. I wish I had a copy I could just stumble across itself. But yeah, that's but it. That's all like I have, Alan.
It's a real shame I never got into it. I got into comics when I first started reading comics. A few years later, like 3 to 4 years later, my grandfather passed away, and I never brought up comic books to him.
Mm-hmm.
Because I didn't get to chance to see him much, or didn't get to see him much because he lived in Florida and he was also deaf. But I would just love to, because so many different things could have happened with him. Like he was even offered offered the opportunity to invest in Mattel before it got big.
Oh jeez.
Yeah, so like in some other parallel universe, my life, I'm like a millionaire. And like every time I hear about that, I'm just like, what could have been?
If only, Alan. But yeah, that's all I have for Action Comics number one.
This has been a good episode.
I enjoyed it. Very nervous. I feel like it showed on numerous times during the episode, but you know, I feel like the more we do this, the easier it'll get.
Yeah, like something I noticed when I host Wynn, the guy who's the co-host or the other guy, like early on it was you and Graydon, and now it's just Graydon. They have, and me on this podcast, we have nothing to worry about. You don't have to worry about keeping track of like certain notes or anything. We just hop on, have a good time.
Yeah, this is, I don't want anyone who comes on this show to feel like they need to put in the work. This is something that I've wanted to do, so I'm willing to do all of the research if I can. That's why this show will be bi-weekly at most, just because it does take so much time to find the stuff, you know, read the books, type up what it's about. You know, it's work, but I'm enjoying it. It's fun going through all this stuff. I'm learning a lot so far of what I've went through.
Yeah, I've learned a lot from just reading through the stuff you've written, like for year one, New Frontier. I've learned more than I did just watching different comic book videos like on YouTube.
I mean, it's weird because as I've been trying to do the research, I keep coming across like the same information. And I'm like, is this it? Is this all that's out there? It's just the same stuff over and over again. So I don't know. Hopefully it's something that people haven't seen or read before, but I'm trying. I'm trying to get stuff out there that could interest people.
Yeah, I mean, it is fitting that the first few episodes will be the big ones, like the heavy hitters, like Superman, Batman, Hal Jordan.
Yeah, like obviously there are some books out there that will be easier to find information on, and some of those, you know, we are touching on, but the ones that just kind of fall just
through the crack.
You know, stuff prior to the internet coming around, it's very hard to find, you know, details like what we did with Action Comics 1 or interviews with people that are no longer living. Just kind of got to make do with what we have. So I will do my best. Is there anything you would like to leave with before I do our little outro?
I have been the Podfather and you have been blessed.
Anything you would like to promote?
Yeah. Or actually, no. By the time I promote, whatever I promote, it'll be far since.
True. Yeah, I guess I should make a mention that we are recording these like way ahead of time just so I get enough lead time. Yeah. On future episodes.
Just a bank episode.
Yep. So I don't know when this one will eventually release, but today is August 1st, 2020, just for a reference. So I'll, you know, putting one in our bag for...
And in about 12 hours, I'll be hosting another podcast.
Good luck with that one. Yeah, let me go ahead and do this outro so you can, I'm guessing, go to bed. And
yeah, it's like 10 to midnight.
Yeah, ready up for that. So yeah, so if you are listening to this, please rate and review wherever you listen to this podcast. Any and all love is appreciated. If you leave criticism, I will evaluate all of that. If I can make the show better, please let me know. And we can't do that without your input. So
if you don't want me on the show, too bad.
Yeah, sorry, they just got to deal with that. I really don't want to do this by myself, so I greatly appreciate you being here. But yeah, don't forget to follow Hypertime, the podcast on Twitter. You can find that at Hypertime Pod. If you have questions or topic suggestions, you can reach us there to leave that stuff, or email us at hypertime2podcast@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JMILLE99. Alan, where would you like them to follow you at?
Follow me on Twitter, the Alan Muir, 2 L's, M-U-I-R.
Alan, thank you for joining me today. I appreciate it. Go to bed. And with that, we will see you down the hyper time, everyone. Take care. Bye. Mm-hmm.